Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome once again to another episode of So I Married a Horror Fan. It's February.
For a second, I thought you were going to say, it's Friday. And I was like, no, it's fucking not.
Well, technically, it will be a Friday when this episode goes out.
It's true. It's Friday.
It's true. It's damn true. Yeah. So, this is a 5x5 episode. It's the first episode for February.
February.
Why is it spelt February, but everybody says February?
Silent R.
The R is silent. Is it like Django, where the D is silent?
Yeah.
So yeah, I like months when we get to start off with 5x5s. There's a couple of months this year where we're going to get to do it. August, September, June, next month, March. It's weird to say next month is March.
I know.
Because January was so long.
It was very long.
But we are kicking off with a fun... I think this is a fun one.
Yeah.
Anyway, you probably, if you've never heard this podcast before, you want to know who we are. I am Simon.
I'm Lee.
And yeah, this is So I Married a Horror Fan. And today we are looking at our 5x5 top 5 desert island horror films. Mm-hmm. Just to clarify, not... horror films set on a desert island.
No.
Not horror films where people are eating dessert on an island.
No. Is there any horror films where people are eating dessert on an island? I suppose any cannibal movie.
Yeah, I mean, like, Cannibal Holocaust.
Yeah, I suppose people are dessert in that situation.
Green Inferno.
Again, people are potentially dessert in that. Do cannibals have dessert? Is there certain parts of the body that are, like, dessert items?
I don't know. Because I would imagine humans, like, if you eat a human the way that you eat an animal, like, it's all savoury, isn't it?
I mean, I feel like if any part of a human is going to be dessert, like, if you're eating a meal, the brain, because it comes in its own little bowl.
Yeah, but also eyes, because you could do eyes scream.
Oh, true.
Yeah. Hmm. Fucking weird conversation.
Yeah. To be although, fair, I have just woken up from a nap, so this may get strange.
Although...
so my brain is just kicking back
who's
in.
Who's that fucking chef who did, like, savoury ice cream and stuff?
Oh, fucking mental boy. What
he
is
did,
his name?
Like, fucking snail ice cream. He went on TV once and was saying, like, if you suck on a tampon, you can suck sugar out of it. Don't, for anyone at home, don't fucking do that.
I can't think what his name is. He's the crazy one.
He's a real fucking lunatic. And he's all like, he does like stuff with like nitrous oxide and stuff like that. And he's like, yeah, man, I've got Marmite ice cream and snail ice cream. And he was putting fucking bacon and ice cream and all kinds of mental
shit. Heston Blumenthal.
There he is. That fucking mental...
Literally, I googled chef who makes weird food, and they were like, did you mean Heston Blumenthal? I mean, yes, that's exactly who I meant.
That fucking mental chap.
I mean, to be fair, I'm pretty sure he is English, which makes so much fucking sense.
Yeah, because I remember the snail ice cream.
They were
I remember,
like, he has weird food, and I'm like, is it... he's British. I remember... obviously, he's fucking strange.
The bacon ice cream, and I remember the tampon interview very vividly, because apparently... there's something in, like, the tampon that if you suck on it, you can get, like, natural sugars out of it, is what he said in this interview. And I was like, do you just see food in everything? You're like, hey, man, so. I'm going to go to fucking Fat Face and buy a shirt and I'm going to suck on the cotton. Woo!
I think my mum has ate at one of his restaurants.
He's a fucking lunatic, I can tell you that much. He makes Chef Slowick from the menu seem fucking
reasonable.
Sane. Although, do you know what I did think when you said about eating like dessert on an island, like dessert on an island?
Who?
Cake by the Ocean by DNC.
Oh.
Dun 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 dun.
Sure,
dun.
It's a metaphor for sex.
Yeah.
This has already gone off.
So does that mean the lyric where he's talking about licking whipped cream off your own hands? He's talking about licking
cum off your own hands. Yeah, yeah.
Like female cum or male cum?
I don't think it really matters. Personal preference, isn't it?
I mean, fair enough. I don't think Joe Jonas has ever made a woman come in his life. So it seems ironic that he would sing an aggressively horny song about fucking and disguise pussy as cake. Because that man looks like he's never seen a vagina up close or a chocolate cake up close.
I mean, we can confirm he's definitely seen a vagina.
For the sake of not being libelous, I will accept the fact that that is actually him and Sophie Turner's kids, because I was just about to say, we don't actually know that they're actually his real kids. But I don't want to get sued by libel. Or have fucking Arya Stark. Fucking, is it Arya she plays? Yeah.
Arya.
I don't want fucking Arya Stark to come cut my head off.
I mean, to be fair, she's quite a small girl. I can't think what her name is. Maisie Williams. We could just hold her.
I was thinking about Maisie Williams. I was thinking about the one that fucking Sophie Turner plays.
Oh, no. She plays...
Can you tell I don't watch Game of Thrones?
Fuck. It's Arya, Jon, Rob, Bran...
Redhead Stark.
Rickon and... Nope. Her character is gone. I know the rest of the Stark kids, including the bastard, but I cannot tell you what.
The bastard.
Family's
always losing their heads.
What is her character called?
I don't fucking know. Sansa.
Stark.
It just came to me.
There we go.
Yeah, I don't want to get fucking sued by Mr. Fucking Promise Ring and his missus. So. Anyway.
Oh, you can tell neither of us are really with it right now.
So yeah, basically, the whole premise of this episode is, if you're stuck on a desert island and for some reason you have a Blu-ray player and a TV, like, what five horror movies would you want to watch? Like, would
take you with you?
Yeah, but like, because when we said about this, you're like, oh yeah, but like, I want to write about rom-coms. And I was like, no. I was like, imagine you've been told that you can have five of every subgenre, but you have to have five horror movies. So how did you, like, before we get into our list and explain how the lists work, how did you approach your list? Did you approach your list as just, like, movies that you genuinely love that are just genuinely great films, or ones that you, like, could see yourself watching, like, all the time?
So it's a bit of both. So, like, well, the movies that I do honestly quite enjoy, but I have movies that I would happily re-watch, like, straight after each other. So just be like, I would watch, like, if I got stuck, and I only had five films. These are the five films that I love, but also have massive rewatchability value. So I could finish it and then put it straight back on again. And I wouldn't be, like, really sad or...
Bored.
Or grossed out.
Mm-hmm. So I approached mine as just, like, films that I love watching. So, like, comfort movies. Like, and movies that, like you, I could watch. Like... If this was a comedy one, Forgetting Sarah Marshall would be on there. Like, because I watched... When that movie came out, I watched that movie every single day for 10 days. Without fail.
If this was a comedy one, Austinland would
and,
be on it.
And, like, Pitch Perfect. When I was unemployed, and I was just sad and eating cereal at 2 o'clock in the afternoon and watching a fuck a lot of Charmed, I watched Pitch Perfect every single day for 2 weeks. If you guys are ever depressed and you don't have access to, like, medication, I suggest watching Pitch Perfect every day. Made me feel
to be fair,
lot better about how shitty my life
depression,
was.
My depression show is Leverage, so...
Sorry, I can... You guys can't see this, so you don't know why I'm laughing.
Oh,
but Lee's got a cup with Robert Pattinson's face on it, and she was staring at me as she was drinking from her cup of tea. And all I could see was fucking Robert Pattinson's face.
So
to
be very clear, like, I haven't just randomly had Robert Pattinson mugs made. We own two that we found...
Three? Don't we have three? Oh, we have two.
We've got three R Pats, one and a Jacob one.
Yeah, we've got one with Taylor Lautner.
That we found in a charity shop, but they're like custom made ones. And they're literally just covered in pictures of Robert Pattinson. One has Robert Pattinson, one has got him as Edward Cullen.
Mm-hmm.
And then one has got, it's just the same picture of him mirrored with like a creepy saying across the top of it.
It says some shit like,
carry my heart with you, I have given it to you, or something like that.
It's got some fucking nonsense.
And they are our favourite mugs. They get used basically every single day.
I'm really fucking gutted that that whoever had these cut. I assume they come from a job lot from the
same
house.
I'm assuming so. We'll have to get pictures of them and we'll put them up so you can see the delightful.
I'm surprised. I'm really gutted that they didn't have a Kristen.
Kristen Stewart. I have been tempted so many times since we bought them to go and get you a Kirsten Stewart one made.
Yeah.
I
called her Kristen, didn't I? Her name's not Kristen, it's Kirsten, isn't it?
Kirsten Stewart.
Who I've watched recently in Crimes of the Future.
Yeah.
She was fucking
I have been very
amazing.
Tempted to get you on made with pictures of her all over it, but specifically her as Bella from Twilight. Like, I did it for one of the girls I worked with, so she'd seen my Robert Pattinson mug, and she was like, they're fucking delightful. So I made her a Tom Holland one for her birthday.
Tom Holliday sauce?
Because Im was obsessed with him.
Yeah, I don't.
And so because she was really jealous of my Robert Pattinson mug, she was like, "These are amazing, and I love them." So I made her a Tom Holland one because I use them for work. In fact, one of them was my work mug
for a really long time
before we went into lockdown. So everyone at work was just like, "Oh, you know the weird girl with the Robert Pattinson mug."
Yeah. Right.
And I'm like, "Yeah, that's me. That's exactly how I want to be known. Thank you."
For those of you that have never listened to a 5x5 before or are new to our podcast in general, welcome. I promise you it's not all fucking weird like this.
No, it 100% is. Do not listen to his lies.
Don't ever listen to the Tragedy Girls episode if you are Dennis Quaid, Meg Ryan or Jack Quaid.
Or do. I mean, it might take you up on your offers, babe.
But this is how it works. So we pick a topic like which we've just explained. We both put together a list of our top fives and then three honourable mentions. One of us goes first, does the three honourable mentions and our number five. Second one does it, and then we go back and forth until we get to our number one. If, for example, Lee was like, "Yeah, man, Midsummer at number five," and then I had Midsummer at number two, we would wait until we get to the higher spot on the list to talk about the film or the whatever the topic for that month, this month is, or the month is. So that's how it works, and then obviously we just go back and forth until all of our lists are done, and then we criticise each other for having stupid lists and opinions on things.
Pretty much, yeah.
I just want to make it clear, because I have to make it clear every episode, these are our personal opinions, and by picking these ones, I'm not saying that these five movies are the greatest five movies of all time. They are just five movies, or in this case, eight, because of the honourable mentions, that I could watch at any time. So yeah. If somebody goes, "You forgot." No, I didn't forget. It was my personal list. You might put something else on your personal list. Doesn't mean it's wrong. Anyway, I'm going to start because I think you started last time.
Pretty confident I did, yeah.
So, my honourable mentions. Number three. Freddy versus Jason. This movie is dumber than a box of rocks, but I fucking love this movie. It turns 20 years old this year. It's one of those movies, like, I can go a year or 2 years without watching it. Then I'll watch it, and then I'll watch it, like, four times. Like, it's, for some reason, I think Netflix over here has the license to this movie. And it's like, you know how, like, Shaun of the Dead is always on ITV2?
Yeah.
Like, Freddy vs. Jason is never not on Netflix. Like, you could always just go Netflix and find it. Even though I bought the Scream Factory Friday the 13th box set recently, so I do have it on Blu-ray. Finally, I just find myself watching it on Netflix at like 3 o'clock in the morning for absolutely no fucking reason other than the fact that it's there and I'm awake. And I guess this is a spoiler alert. We will be covering it at some point later in the year for the 20th anniversary, so you're welcome. My number two honourable mention is the only Stephen King film on this list.
Oh.
Doctor Sleep. I have spoke about Doctor Sleep multiple times on multiple episodes when we've talked about, like, our favourite vampires, favourite, like, adaptations, things like that. Mike Flanagan is a fucking hero. He is just fucking tremendously talented as a filmmaker. And I think he's going to do The Dark Tower. Finally, he's going to do The Dark Tower. So I'm excited to see what he does with The Dark Tower. Not that fucking DTINO movie we got a couple of years ago. So I'm excited. And Doctor Sleep is a really good film. It's a really, like, heavy film in places, but it is a really good film. It's amazing to look at. It's got wonderful characters in it. Like, and it's just, the director's cut is a really fucking good film. And it's one of those movies, like, I didn't want to watch for ages because The Shining is one of only two, like, one of two movies in existence that genuinely scares the shit out of me. So I was like, I don't want to, like, there's that part of me that's like, I don't want to return to this world. But then I finally watched it and was like, you know what, this is a fucking masterpiece. And I've seen it, like, a bunch of times. Like, I usually put it on if I'm working from home and just have it on in the background. My number one is another movie that a lot of people would be like, why would you want to watch that all the time? And it's another one that I watch quite a lot when I'm working from home. Hereditary.
Yeah, you have a weird thing about that film.
I really... Like, actually, when we went out today, you didn't see it.
Because
I had my Hereditary long sleeve on.
I can't say a word.
I got a sick Hereditary long sleeve from Hell on Shirts that's got the Payman logo down the arms and stuff. So yeah, I just, it's one of those movies, like, again, like, I think I said this when we watched Ghost Watch. When I was working at the cinema when this movie came out, and I kept seeing trailers for it, and everyone was like, the scariest movie since The Exorcist. And then, like, I knew a bunch of people at work that went to see it, and they were like, yeah, it's fucking weird. It's just, like, naked old people and, like, blah, blah, blah. And I finally got around to watching it, I think, about 2 years after everyone else.
Yeah.
Because I watched it for the first time, I think, when I bought it on Blu-ray, which was, like, late 2019, early 2020.
Mm.
And I fell in love with it, like, immediately. Like, I understand, like, it's not a movie for everybody, and I'm not going to fucking Jenna Ortega and Scream 5 all over the reasons why I love it. But I just think it's one of those movies that, like, it rewards repeat viewings.
Yeah.
And I think if I was on a spooky ass island, just like Spooky Island from Scooby-Doo, and I was just like, I think it would be like a really immersive experience watching like Hereditary in like a fucking, on a fucking island somewhere. I think it'd be really cool. And you know, for those of you that have seen it, like you're either in one of two schools of thought. You're like, I've seen this movie and I never want to watch it again. Or you're like me, like, you get something out of it every time you, like, rewatch it. So, yeah, that's my second honourable mention. No, that was my third honourable mention.
No idea, babe.
Yeah, so that was my number one honourable mention. My number five on my main list, and this will come as absolutely no surprise to you, I literally watched this movie 3 days ago. Do you know what it is? Malignant, son! I've seen this movie so many fucking times. We did an entire whole ass, like, hour and a half episode on this last year. So go and listen to the episode. But, like, I think this movie, since this movie came out in 2021, I've seen this movie 10 times. Like, I watch this movie, like, when I'm homesick from work, when I'm working from home, like, at 3 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah.
Like, sometimes I'm, like, going to work on the train and I'm like, I'm bored, I'm gonna watch 45 minutes of Malignant. Like, I just love this fucking movie, and it's one of those movies, like, I don't have to think too hard about it, so I kind of just put it on and I'm just like, yeah, you know, like, it's on in the background. And yeah, it's become a real comfort film for me. I know you don't like it. Or you do, but you don't want to admit you like it. Like,
yeah.
But, like, yeah, I just think it's fucking great. And I would highly suggest, if you really want a more articulated reason as to why I love this movie, like, go and listen to our episode that we did. Because it's a good listen, I think. And, like, it's interesting to hear all of the reasons why I love it are exactly all of the reasons why you hate it. And I think it's a really interesting episode for us to, like, tackle a film. But there's moments in the episode where you're like, yeah, but that was kind of cool. And, like, Hot Action Cop.
Hot Action Cop is good.
And then he was in that Lindsay Lohan movie and I lost all respect for him.
Yeah, true.
So, go on then. Hit me with your best list.
Okay, so my best list is, right, my honourable mentions. So because of the way I did this, there were films that I was like, I would take, but I'm not sure on the rewatchability of it.
Yeah.
How many times I'll be able to watch it before I just be like, I can't watch that anymore. So sadly, and I want to put a formal apology out to my favourite human being on the planet, my third, number three honourable mention is Scare Me.
Okay.
I love that film. I think it's great. But also I'm a little bit like, I think it would send me stir fucking crazy.
Yeah.
Being alone on an island watching Scare Me, which is basically an isolation film. It's a fucking fantastic movie, and it would be really interesting to probably watch it like a bubble.
Yeah.
But I couldn't do it. So it got on my honourable mentions list, but yeah, number three. Okay, number two on my honourable mentions, Cabin in the Woods.
Yeah, that tracks.
Yeah, I fucking love this movie. I was really picky with my top five, which is why this is on my honourable mentions. Both films I have mentioned got moved in and out of my list multiple times before I settled on who was going where. This film's fun, and it's just a good laugh. I really do enjoy this film. Like, I think it's one of the few films that I've given, like, 5 stars to on the podcast. Like, I honestly adore it, but I was like, no. And number one on my honourable mentions, Zombieland.
Oh, okay. Fair enough.
I fucking love Zombieland. It is dumb. It is a survival movie.
Mm-hmm.
It is absolutely fucking ridiculous.
Yes, all of those things.
And it's just a good film to watch.
It answers the questions. What would Shaun of the Dead look like if it was made by Americans?
Exactly. But more importantly, we're going to go into my proper list.
Okay.
Now, these five I have literally picked for rewatchability, and they are all films that I have seen numerous times.
How many of your top five have we done episodes on?
One, two, four.
I think all of my top five we have done episodes on.
All four of them we have done episodes on. My number one we have not.
Okay. That's interesting.
So number five mm-hmm. on my list, Queen of the Damned.
Okay.
Now, Simon doesn't like this film. I will admit this film is trashy, but I also would like to state at this very moment in time, I have seen this film so many times when I was younger to the point where I can reel off the entire opening monologue from memory. And when we watched it, you kept getting annoyed because I was talking along with all of the characters.
Yeah.
Because I have seen it so many times and I will still rewatch it now.
It was a bit like Mystery Science Theater when we watched it together. It was really yeah funny.
It's one of those films that I can quote endlessly. I know it's shit. I know it's a really bad adaptation. I know it's not a great film overall, but there is something just wildly entertaining about the whole film. So I was like, I have to put it on there because I literally have rewatched it to the point of like it is like stuck inside my brain and I will never get that out.
Yeah.
So I was like, it's got to go on there. We can't not have probably the most memorable film in my brain on that list.
That's fair.
Yeah. That's my number five. Queen of the Damned. Sorry, guys.
I think probably from this point out, you'll be able to work out what the rest of my other four are.
Maybe.
Number four.
Mm-hmm.
Fear Street Part 1, 1994.
Yeah. That tracks.
Mate, I have seen this movie...
You've seen it a fucking
so many fucking times. But the problem with this movie, putting this movie on the list, is two reasons. One is I wanted to put the entire trilogy on there, but then I was like, I can't take up three spaces and I can't have all three of them as one film.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing is as well, like, I'm starting to get to a point where, like, I have, like, committed this film to memory.
Yeah.
And, like, I watch this film... But then I have to watch the other two as well, especially part three. I won't spoil it, but if you've seen part three, you know why you kind of watch part three and part one together. But yeah, this is another film that we did a Crossing the Stream on like about a year ago, actually. It was our February Crossing the Stream for last year. And yeah, I've seen this movie. It's one of those movies, again, like with Freddy vs. Jason, like with Malignant. Like, I will sit there and I'll flick through Netflix or Amazon Prime or Disney Plus for like an hour, trying to find something to watch, and then I'll just go, fuck it, and watch Fear Street. And, yeah, I fucking love this movie. Like, I think I love this movie for the same reasons that I love, like, a lot of movies like this. It just reminds me of, like, the kinds of horror movies that I grew up watching. Like, for those of you that have listened, are long-time listeners, you know that I grew up, like, in the 90s slasher boom. And I just think it's a really inventive, really fun film. And I just want to hang out with Lee Janiak. She just seems like the nicest person in the world. And I just want to hang out with her and be friends with her. So yeah, my number four, Fear Street Part 1, 1994.
Okay, my number four. I feel like would be blindingly obvious to most people, especially you, because you know how much I love this fucking film. Ready or not. I did think.
So this movie was originally going to be on my list, and then I took it off my list because I knew that you were going to put it on yours.
You're like, she's going to have it because she fucking loves that film. Like, this was like the film that kind of convinced me that, okay, maybe we could do a horror podcast. Because up until Ready or Not, I had basically refused to watch any horror movies with you. This was like the first film that you legitimately got me to sit down and watch.
Yeah.
And I think it was only because you were watching it already and I came downstairs for something and ended up sat watching it with you.
Yeah, so I remember it was right at the beginning of lockdown
season one.
So it was literally like a couple of days before all the shops closed down. I think we went into town and bought a bunch of Blu-rays and like did a food shop.
Yeah, we went to CEX and we did the pound. Yeah. Well, it was 50p DVD Blu-rays back then.
And I bought, because I'd bought a copy of Doom Eternal, some other Blu-rays, and then I bought this because I hadn't seen it because I missed it at the cinema. And I think you are right. I think I was just like, put it on, and you were a bit like ambivalent. And I think you just happened to be in the room when it was on.
I think I was cross-stitching.
Yeah, that makes sense.
That was a lot of part one of lockdown, was me just cross-stitching everything.
Yeah, a lot of our first few months in lockdown were like, fucking, I was haunted by Animal Crossing. Like, Animal Crossing, our house, like, we watched Host the other night, and that's just all I remember from the first 6 months of lockdown, is you fucking playing Animal Crossing via Zoom with your friends. Who are now my friends as well.
You'd come upstairs, like, and I'd be sat with like my phone balanced against something with a screen full of all of them.
Yeah.
As we're playing Animal Crossing together, visiting each other's islands, because it's easier to talk via our phones than try and write messages in game.
Yeah. I remember like when you started playing Animal Crossing on my Switch before you got yours.
Yeah, before I got my own.
And then they all helped you move.
Yeah, I forgot about that. I originally was on Simon's Switch, and I bought my own Switch during lockdown because the girls bought me Animal Crossing for my birthday because they were all playing it, so they went and bought me it.
Yeah.
And yeah, when I finally got my own Switch, showed up like a month later. We basically had a moving party, and we were like, literally, we coordinated an Animal Crossing island move.
Yeah.
Oh, that was a fun day.
But yeah, that's how this film came into our lives.
It was, yeah.
So why is I think you should actually talk about why it's on your list.
So I really love it. So I think part of it is because of stuff like that. Like, part of Ready or Not will always forever be linked to lockdown for me.
Yeah.
Because it was like the film that kind of basically got me through lockdown to begin with. Because I kind of struggled to start with.
Yeah.
Eventually, I was like, oh no, I've been practicing my whole life in lockdown. But up until that moment, I was struggling a little bit. And like, Ready or Not really helped. I think we watched it quite a few times in the early days of lockdown.
I watched it about a week ago. I rewatched it on Disney Plus about a week ago.
You did, because I was downstairs for part of it, and then I was like, no, I'm too sleepy, I have to go to bed now. And I know what happens, it's fine. But I love it. I love the characters. I love the whole thing. And it is the kind of film where I could finish watching it and immediately restart watching it again.
Yeah.
And every time I watch it, I notice little things that I'm like, oh shit, I haven't noticed that before. Or, oh, I didn't realise it was that character that did that. Like, that's a really odd thing. Plus, I just really love Daniel, and hashtag justice for Daniel.
Well, I didn't realise until I rewatched it the other day, the scene where Fitch is watching the fucking crossbow video on his laptop, mm-hmm. or on his phone, or whatever it is he's doing. One of the guys in the fucking video is the guy who wrote it.
Yeah.
Or one of the guys who wrote it, and it's like Chad Vahela is the other guy. And then James Vanderbilt, who is the other writer, because it's Guy Busick and James Vanderbilt who wrote it. And James Vanderbilt is Mr. LaBelle.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. Also, there was an alternate ending to this movie. And I don't know if it's actually on the Blu-ray, because I've never watched the deleted scenes. There was actually an alternate ending that was either pitched or shot, I can't remember, where, like, you see someone at like, or Mr. LaBelle at like a fucking another games convention, like preying on another family that like sets up a sequel.
Heard about that.
Yeah, rather than it ending the way that it fucking ends. But like, the thing that always makes me laugh about this movie, there's one particular moment in this movie, and it's off screen, but not the implication, but what it is so fucking brutal to imagine as a human being. And it's the bit, I don't want to spoil it in case people haven't seen it, because it is quite a cool ending to a film. And if you have seen it, go and listen to our episode. It's the first
episode. Oh, the out of shot explosion.
Yeah. The implication of what it is is horrifying.
Yeah.
But it is such a good film.
It is such a good film, and it's really a really fun film.
Yeah, because it's one of those weird things of, like, it's fun, but it's also, like, super mean-spirited.
Yeah.
And, like, it was the film that made me go, when Radio Silence, because obviously I was aware of Radio Silence before they released this, because of VHS, that was the film that made me go, okay, like, they could make a Scream movie, and then they obviously did make a Scream movie, and then obviously they've just made another Scream movie. But yeah, there's so many bits in it that are just, like, super fucking memorable. And it's the movie that made me like, take notice of who Samara Weaving was. And, like, I think I've seen, like,
I've seen most pretty much
everything that she's been. I haven't seen Babylon yet. And I haven't seen that fucking Valley movie that she did that's on Disney Plus, where she's like the famous actress who falls in love with the dorky fucking valet, the comedy one, because it looked a bit.
I haven't seen that. I don't remember that. I might have wiped it from my brain if the trailer looked a bit dodge.
And then, yeah, obviously she's going to be in Scream 6. S6 Scream, or whatever the fuck.
But yeah, so there we go. My number 4 is Ready or Not.
Missed opportunity, though. Jordan Peele's out there like, hey, man, I'm going to put some fucking creepy, like, slowed down fucking pop songs.
Ready or Not.
Yeah, they should have ponied up and paid the Fugees to get a creepy version of Ready or Not in the trailer. I'm gonna find you. Although I do like the song that's in, like, the old-timey song that's in the fucking film. Like, the hide-and-seek song or whatever it is really cool.
Yeah.
So my number 3... is, speaking of Scream, it's Scream.
It's Scream.
1996.
Yeah, I assumed you meant
the original. I have seen this movie so many goddamn times that, like, it lives in my brain as, like, a fucking file. Like, I can pull random quotes, scenes, like, anything from this movie at random.
Yeah.
Because I have seen it so many fucking times.
Yeah.
And, like, I've been watching this movie since I was 12 years old, and I am now 28. So that's a long time for that movie to have been, like, part of my life. And, like, yeah, I never get bored of watching this movie. And it's, I think it's the one Scream movie I have watched the most. Although I have seen most, I think 4 is the one that I've watched the least. And 1 and 3 are the ones that I've watched the most.
Mm-hmm.
Although I do love 2. But yeah, it's just one of those movies. Like, I think the rewatchability is there because it's a movie that I grew up with. So, like, it's been there for so much of my life that I'm just like, it's just... without being that guy who's like, hey man, horror movies have a whole personality. But it is kind of like a part of, like, who I am as a person.
Yeah.
Like, having that movie in my life. And yeah, I just... it's one of those movies, like, other than the clothing and, like, the lack of technology, I don't ever think it really ages. Like, when we popped it, so I've watched it fairly recently, but we did an episode on it. And, like, watching it back for that episode, I was like, this doesn't feel like a fucking 25-year-old movie.
No,
like,
it's aged really well.
Yeah, it doesn't fit. Like, when you put it next to, like, 5 Cream... I'm like, these movies literally... like, 5 Cream literally could have been, like, a year later sequel to, like, fucking Scream. Like, everybody in... all of the original characters in 5 Cream, other than Dewey, who has noticeably aged, because he looks fucking 12 in the original Scream.
True.
Like, Nev Campbell and Gail... not Gail. Courtney Cox look exactly the fucking same. Also, have you ever noticed in the movies how, other than 3, how their, like, haircuts mirror each other?
Yeah.
I was like... the fuck is that about? Especially in 2, when they've both got the fucking bob, and then Gail's got the red bits in it. But yeah, so for obvious reasons, Scream is my number 3.
Okay, that's fair. My number 3.
But it has to be the uncut version because I ain't no pussy ass bitch. Sorry. Show me Steve's intestines. Yeah, cut your number 3.
Okay, my number 3 is. I've loved this film since I was maybe, like, 14, 13 years old.
Oh, we're about to interview some vampires,
We are
son.
Not
going to
interview some vampires.
But we are, though, because they're going to be on a carousel. They're going to be like, oh, Michael, you're eating
no,
the
maggots. Again, you're not. That's, oh! No, it's not that film.
Are you trying to bring Princess Bride into this?
Yeah, it's Princess Bride. I fucking wish, no. My number 3 is Battle Royale.
Oh, damn. You want to watch a movie on a desert island that's about kids on an island getting killed?
Yeah.
What is wrong with you?
So many things. So many fucking things. Honestly. So I first saw Battle Royale when I was like maybe 13, 14 years old. And I got a bootleg copy of it off my friend.
Yeah, I think I got a bootleg. I think I said this in the episode. We both said it, didn't we?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it was a bootleg copy I got off of my friend. And I fucking fell in love with this film. This is the film that introduced me to Tatsuya Fujiwara, who went on to be one of my favourite actors for a really long time. He's in a lot of stuff that I really like. It was also, like, my first experience of Japanese cinema. It introduced me to not only this film, but also then the book. The book is fucking phenomenal. And I just have a lot of, like, really fond memories attached to this film. Oh. Sounds weird because of what it is, but, like, teenage me, my best friend growing up, Mel, also loved this film. We used to watch it quite a lot at sleepovers. And, yeah, it just became, like, a staple of my life for a really long time when I was younger.
Also, bro, this movie is old enough that it came out on VHS.
Yes.
It would have been in the last, like, couple of years. Because, like, VHS, I think, phased out in 2003-ish, roughly 2004. And this came out in 2000. I remember not having a copy of it on VHS, though. I remember getting a burned copy of it on DVD. I think my uncle gave it to me, and he gave me a copy of Itchy the Killer as well, which my mum obviously loved me watching at the age of, like, fucking 17.
But, yeah, no, I got Battle Royale bootlegged, and then when I later bought it for myself, well, you couldn't get it in HMV, or you couldn't get it in a record shop or, like, a DVD shop. I got it from a market stall at Doncaster Market in the internal, like, so this is for anyone who's ever been to Doncaster, this is really vague, but there's a, there used to be an external and internal market at the far end, past the Corn Exchange, and there used to be this little DVD video place, and they would have, like, a load of, like, foreign movies that, like, they just had shipped over. And, yeah, it was where I bought Battle Royale. It was where I bought a lot of shit from, actually, but it's specifically where I bought Battle Royale from.
Yeah, because I don't think, like, with a lot of these things, like, the UK didn't catch up until, like...
years later.
Yeah, I think I remember seeing this movie for the first time in, like, maybe 2003, 2002. So it was already, like, a couple of years old.
Yeah. But no, I just ended up really loving this film, and I've seen it so many fucking times. Like, to the point where, like, there's not even a surprise left in it for me now.
Yeah.
Like, I know how it's going to play out. Like, without a shadow of a doubt, I know exactly what's about to happen. I know exactly where the film's going. I own two separate copies of this on DVD, on Blu-ray now, I think. I'm pretty sure I have the standalone Arrow release, and then I have the deluxe Arrow release with the second film and all of the special feature stuff on it. And we sat and rewatched it for the podcast because we did an episode on this.
We did, it's true.
And it must be the first time I'd seen it in so fucking long, and I still remember watching it going, oh, fuck, this is such a good film.
Sorry, technical issues.
Technical problems.
Well, not really. keep talking.
I will just keep talking. But yeah, it stands up really well. Like, for how old the film now is, like, it stands up really well. Which I think is kind of not anticipated for a film as old as it is. In English.
Yeah.
I mean, to be fair, there's American and English movies that have aged far fucking worse than this, that are way more recent. But it's, like, it's a lot of practical stuff. Like, oh, everyone's age appropriate as well, which I really love about this film. Because it's quite common, I think, in other cinema to actually cast people who are the age of the character they're playing, unlike America and England, where we go, oh, they're 13, they're not, they're 25.
Yeah.
Like... it was really cool to see a film where, like, people were actually the age they were supposed to be. I think they're only, like, a couple of years out at most.
I think I remember hearing about this movie because of fucking Tarantino. Because it must have been around the time that Kill Bill came out that I'd seen this for the first time. And obviously Tarantino casted the young girl from it in Kill Bill. And I think because...
I can't think what her character's called, but it's the girl in the yellow tracksuit.
But because he was raving about this movie, like, I was like, I need to get a copy of this.
Yeah, because Tarantino has called it one of the best films ever made, hasn't he?
Yeah, he's written, like, forwards for, like, releases
of it
and stuff.
Yeah, he fucking adores this film.
Yeah, like, it's one of his favourite movies.
There's not much I like about you, Tarantino, but I like that.
Like the colour of your jib, sir. Yeah, and, like, do you know what, though? I think I said this on the episode when we covered it. But, like, I have, like, some weird mandala thing when it comes to this movie. I thought Takashi Miike made this.
No.
But then I think that every fucked up Japanese movie is made by Takashi Miike.
I mean, you make a good point, but no, it's not a Takashi Miike film. It does have Takashi Kitano in it, but yeah. It's not a Takashi Miike film.
Because it's one of, like, it's one of the first films that I got into when I got into Asia Extreme. Or,
as I used to call it when I was younger, because I didn't realise how you pronounce the name, Takashi Mike.
Yeah. Yeah. What a fucking legend.
It's a fucking, it's a great film though. Like, it is legitimately. And not only that, like, it has some really interesting characters. And also, while remaining quite loyal to the book, they managed to change enough that if you have read the book before you see it, there's still bits to surprise you watching it.
The Arrow.
Although they did take out one of my favourite kills from the book, which always makes me sad.
The Arrow release box set that I got you, has that got the uncut version on it?
It does. It has the original edition, the uncut edition, and then it has got Revenge and Requiem in it, which are the two cuts of the sequel. Because I have two copies of the sequel as well, because I have the copy you bought me, and then I have it in a steelbook DVD with an actual cut from the...
when the film sells.
Sells, yeah. It's got one of the cells of... I cannot think what his character's name is.
Dave.
No, but Tetsuya Fujiwara's character.
Oh, yeah, I know the one you mean.
What is his character called?
I don't know. It's been a while since I've seen it.
My brain is like, I don't know, Kiriyama. I'm like, Kiriyama's the bad guy. Kiriyama's my favourite, for a side note, Kiriyama is my favourite character in that film.
Nice.
I like the little psychopath. I like the cut of his jib. I also like the way he's like introduced properly on the island when he takes out a bunch of guys with paper fan. It's just fucking magnificent.
He's the guy who looks like the dude from the fucking Obscure video by Dieran Gray.
He looks like he's put his finger in a plug socket, yeah.
Yeah,
that's the one.
Nice.
But he's my favourite character, just in case. I can't remember if I mentioned that on the... I think I did.
Yeah.
I probably did. But for anyone who didn't listen to that episode and can't be asked to go back to listen to me literally jack off that film for like an hour and a half, Kiriyama is my favourite character.
It's a good movie.
Yeah, it's really going to annoy me now. I can't think what his... character's called. It'll come to me later and I'll be like, oh, you fucker. Yeah, Battle Royale. It's my number three.
My number two. Come on in, the weather's dreadful.
Psycho.
It is Psycho.
Oh, she is so bad at Psycho.
Psycho, 1999 by Gus Van Sant. Psych. It's Psycho by Alfred Hitchcock. Because it's an absolute goat film. There you go, review over.
That's my review of it.
No, I love this movie. Like, this movie is a perfect film. Like, I said it when we reviewed it, like, when we did the episode on it, like, 18 months ago or however long it was that we did it. Like, I consider Psycho to be a perfect film. Like, 10 out of 10, no notes. Like, Gus Van Sant, what are you doing, bro?
Yeah.
Yeah, I just... Everything about this movie is incredible. And it's the first, like, Alfred Hitchcock movie that I saw, which then made me fall in love with Alfred Hitchcock's work. And, like, it's... Everybody talks about, like, Psycho. And, like, I was watching an episode of Eli Roth's History of Horror the other day. And they were like, Psycho is so embedded in people's minds and in people's pop culture. Like, as Elijah Wood says in his interview on that episode, he's like... Kids know that thing, but they don't know where it comes from. Mm. Or, like, everybody knows the shower scene. Everybody knows, like, that image of, like, Janet Leigh turning around in the shower and screaming. And I think it's an incredible film that, for a film that came out in 1960, is dealing with, like, a lot of complex things.
Mm.
Like, a lot of people want to say, oh, like, it was the birth of the slasher movie. This and Peep and Tom, like, gave rise to, like, the slasher movie and inspired films like Halloween and Black Christmas. It sort of obviously went on to spawn, like, Jason and Freddy and all that sort of stuff. But, like, nobody ever gives Psycho its flowers for its, like, exploration of, like, mental health and, like, identity issues and, like... childhood trauma and abuse and, like, these other things that this movie, like, tackles really head on. Yeah. And, like, I've seen people talk about, like, the trans identity issue because they're, like, talking about the relationship between Norman and his mother and is, like, is he trying to be his mother? Like, is his mother a separate person? Like, has he got BPD? Like, has he got, like, does he want to be a woman? Is he not, like, wanting to be a woman? Like, there's so many things, right or wrong, that people have discussed about this movie over the years. And it's like, I think we discussed it, didn't we? Because we talked about the whole thing of like people thinking that he was trans. And it's like, no, he's not dressing up because he wants to be a woman or he identifies as a woman. Like, his mother is a completely separate personality in his head. And you think at like where the world was in 1960 or 1959 when this movie would have been made before it was released. You think about like Hitchcock looking at the story that was written, the book, and then having the fucking guts not only to kill off his lead actress 45 minutes into the film, but then also tackle those really big questions of like mental health issues and like parental relationships and how they inform the relationships that we have as an adult and like what abuse does to someone. And like, people give Psycho a lot of shit. People also praise Psycho a lot. And I don't, but I think they give it shit or they praise it for the wrong reasons. Like, they praise it for like, you know, the iconic images and things like that. I don't think they give it enough credit for its like study of like mental health and characterization. And for me, that's, and like, to be fair, like, it's just an incredible, incredibly well-made film. And like, it's one of those movies where like you watch it and you as the audience knows who Norman is and what he's done. But then you're just like, every scene where he's in, where he's about to get caught by the police or he's about to do something, you're just like, there's a little part of you that's like, nah, man, I hope my dog gets away with it.
Yeah.
Look at him. Look how cute he is. My man's just stood there in a turtleneck eating fucking nuts. Like, look at him. He didn't do nothing wrong. That's my dog.
They're all a boy's best friend.
Yeah. And like, it's also incredible that like, they create a fucking villain who is not only super iconic, but also like super sympathetic. Like, you don't want him to be doing these things. Like, you don't want him to get caught.
It's nice to see, like, a killer in a horror movie as well who is, like, not intimidating.
Yeah.
There is nothing about Norman Bates that, like, would put you on edge.
No.
And that's why I love this movie so much, because I'm with this movie's fucking fantastic.
Yeah.
There is literally nothing about Norman Bates that puts you on edge. And it, I think it's one of the greatest decisions ever made is casting
Anthony Perkins.
Anthony Perkins. Because he's so, he's just so, he's cute and he's really skinny. Like, he's not a big dude. Mm-hmm. And he just comes across like as like a really friendly, like, he'd help an old lady cross the road. Yeah. Like, he would
save
offer
a cat from a tree.
Yeah, he'd offer to help you get your shopping to your car. And you'd look at him and go, all right, yeah, actually, I'd let you, like, as a woman, I'd be like, I would let you help me put my shopping in the car. Terrible idea, because he would probably kill me, but I would let him put my shopping in my car.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, it's a, I'm with you, it's a fucking phenomenal.
And it's film. Like, it's,
and then we have a whole episode on how much Lee sucks this movie's dick, in fact.
And it's interesting as well, because when I watched Queer for Fear, the horror documentary on Shudder, they had Oz Perkins on there, who's Anthony's son.
Mm. And he is the musician?
Oz? No, he's the one that directs films.
Ah.
He, do you know what? He is in, you know Dave, Plain Dave from Legally Blonde, the nerdy guy?
Mm-hmm.
That's him.
Yeah, no, I know. Yeah.
And he talks about, obviously, like, Anthony Perkins' like sexuality and like how he hid it for a long time. Mm-hmm. But he's like, Hitchcock knew. And like, I think Hitchcock really played into that and like tried to push the femininity of the character, which I think is why in certain scenes, I mean, obviously the whole stuff with the split personality and things as well, but I think that's why in certain scenes you're kind of like, is he gay? Is he actually interested in women? Like, and I don't know if that's just Anthony Perkins is like himself coming through, or if it was like purposely, like, it's implied or kind of like outward stated in the documentary that like Hitchcock knew that, so he was like pushing it, but like not in the most sensitive way.
Yeah. I mean, to be fair, Hitchcock at this point in time is renowned for being an absolute asshole to work with.
Mate,
so
if Hitchcock was alive today, my man would get fucking cancelled quicker than a fucking Netflix TV series.
And rightfully so, because he was an absolute cunt to work for.
Yeah, and like, let's not make any bones about it. Hitchcock was a fantastic filmmaker, and nobody can take away his filmmaking talent from him, but he was a fucking prick.
Yeah.
So it doesn't fucking surprise me that he was that way, like, that way with Anthony Perkins.
Yeah.
Having seen what he was like with, or heard what he was like with women, Tippi Hedren being a prime example of
that's
that.
That's the woman from Birds, isn't
yeah,
it?
That's Dakota Johnson's nan.
Yeah.
It doesn't shock me that that's how he was.
No.
But the fucking film is fantastic.
It is.
Like, and that's what we're talking about. Yeah. So, go on, what's your number two? Drop a deuce on me, son.
There's a deuce. The one thing I know I could stand about this film. Oh, the damn vampires.
I fucking knew this shit was coming up.
So, quick rundown of Lee's love of fucking Lost Boys. I first saw Lost Boys approximately the age of about 14, 15. I watched this movie every single night for a fucking year. That is not an exaggeration. That is a stated fact. Every single night. I would put it on before I went to bed every night. I had like a TV-DVD combo nice. In my bedroom. And I'd like clamber into my high-top bed. I had a half bunk bed.
But you won't let us get bunk beds.
Because we are grown-ass fucking adults. I was a teenager. Most of the time I slept... to be fair, I stopped sleeping up there eventually because I don't like heights very much.
I would take top bunk.
No, because I don't like sleeping on bottom bunks either.
So what you're saying is you're not a top or a bottom?
No. I'm a switch.
Jesus Christ.
So I would get up and be like... Oh, like 8 o'clock would roll around. So I'd be like, right, guys, I'm off to bed. And I'd be like...
I'm off to jerk it to vampires.
And then literally she'd come check on me 20 minutes later. I'd be bundled, like, with my covers up over my head. Like, my little face just poking out. Watching Lost Boys. And, like, literally for a whole year, it was, like, my night routine. Except for one night a year, which was when I watched... two nights a year, which is when I watched Night Before Christmas.
I have to ask you a question, though.
Yeah?
After all of these years and all of the viewings of the film, do you still believe?
I still believe. I still believe.
Mate, Tim Capello.
Tim Capello is a gift that keeps on fucking giving.
He turns up at For the Love of Horror in Manchester.
I got you a badge or a key ring with him playing the saxophone.
Every fucking year.
Fucking
and he does he does meet and greets.
Yeah.
And he does a concert. He does like a fucking concert. Because he toured with Tina Turner.
I'd pay money to meet him. I fucking love it.
Isn't it revealed in the comic books?
That he's a vampire hunter.
That he's a vampire hunter.
Yeah, so in the later comic books, you find out that Saxman is in fact actually a vampire hunter, and that's why he was in Santa Carla, was to hunt down the boys.
Tim Capello.
The bro.
A greased up man in a wife-beater vest with a fucking chain around his neck, looking like fucking Hercules playing the saxophone. Like, I don't like this movie.
I fucking love this movie.
At all. But there are things about this movie that I do like. So, I like Kiefer Sutherland, because I think you have to be a lunatic not to like Kiefer Sutherland.
Yeah.
I like the soundtrack, and I like Joel Schumacher.
Okay, can I talk about why I picked this
film
now?
Yeah, yeah,
thank you. Honestly, there was no one on this planet I think you knew the minute you set this list Lost Boys was going to be on my list somewhere. This movie has, now I'm slightly older, it has a slightly like bittersweet attachment to it. Because of the person who introduced me to the film.
Mm-hmm.
But it still is like a huge part of like my formative years. And I like, There's no way you can watch a film every night for a year and like then sit there and go, oh, well, I couldn't watch it over and over and over again. Like, fuck, this movie is fucking perfect. And it is endlessly quotable. Again, another film you got really annoyed when you were watching it because I was quoting along with the characters.
Mm-hmm.
Because I know this film back to front. They do a book adaptation of it. It's really fucking hard to get hold of. I've been trying for years. It sells for quite... like a substantial.
Please
amount.
Tell me Corey Feldman does an audiobook of it.
Oh god, that'd be amazing. I mean, it has two terrible sequels.
A failed TV show.
A failed TV show. There's comic books.
R.I.P. Joel Schumacher.
But like, it's one of those films that every now and then it gets brought up of like, could do with like a reboot.
Mm-hmm.
Could we get another? I would hate to see this film remade. Because I think it is perfect as it is. But I would like a sequel that was originally planned.
Yeah.
Just putting it out into the universe. If anyone wants to do an all-female Lost Boys film.
That was what the TV show was going to be, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was the original sequel idea. Mm. Was the Lost Girls.
And they did the fucking musical, didn't they? Gerard McMahon did the musical, yes, or wrote the music for a musical, but I don't think the actual stage show ever happened.
I don't think the stage show happened, but they did write all the music for a musical. Of course, it was Gerard McMahon.
It's on fucking Spotify.
It is.
You can listen to it.
But yeah, it's just one of those films, like, I honestly think this is a perfect movie.
Mm.
I really, truly fucking love it.
I actually thought of you the other day, because I saw it, I might have been on Bloody Disgusting, they're doing a showing of it on the place where it was shot, like, in the summer.
What, Santa...
The pier, whatever the pier is.
It's Santa Cruz Pier.
Yeah. Because, like, I think Jordan Peele missed a trick, because in the beginning of Us...
They're at the Santa Cruz Pier.
Yaya Abdul-Mateen's character says,
they're filming
a film over there. Because I think they would, at that point, I imagine they would have been filming like the carousel scene, I guess.
Yeah.
Because
that's the main thing that was shot there.
Yeah,
it?
And I just feel like he missed a trick to just like brush past and just see like some fucking fake actors in the background. Like, making the movie. But yeah, he cited it as one of the influences on fucking... Like,
I would have liked him to have done like them, like where he's like, oh yeah, they're filming a scene, and when they do a cutaway to far away, him to then do the swoop camera, do you know, like they do at the opening of Lost Boys the ocean. Just like a little nod would have been quite cool.
Mm.
I love the fact that I can tell you. I was like, yeah, that movie opens with the swooping camera. I think it's slightly. I don't think it opens with a swooping camera. I'm pretty sure it opens on Michael, Sam, and their mum in the car.
Yeah, didn't. It didn't quite happen for Jason Patrick though, did it?
No, it did not.
When did this movie come out? Like, 88?
88.
Like, 9 years later, my man's doing Speed 2.
Yeah. But it gave us some really iconic vampires. Like, fucking David is iconic as fuck. So is Max, to be fair.
Is he the old man?
Yeah. Rest his soul. I can't think what the actor is called. Herman.
Yeah, I know the one.
Herman. There's a Herman in his name somewhere. I think it's his surname.
Yeah.
He went and played Rory Gilmore's granddad in Gilmore Girls.
Fucking yes, that is him, innit?
Yeah.
That is him. Fuck me, yeah. I've only... Unless you mention it on the episode, no, I completely forgot. I've only just put that fucking together.
Edward Herman?
Maybe, I don't know.
Can't remember, that's going to irritate me now as well. he's great in it. Sadly, no longer with us, which is... you know, not great. Makes me sad. But it's just... Honestly, is a fucking great film. That's all I can really say about this film over and over again. Is it's just honestly a fucking great film. And yeah, Edward Herman, I was right. Yeah, that's my number two.
My number one.
Yes.
Should come as absolutely no surprise to anyone.
Okay.
Look ahead.
Mm-hmm. I did assume this was what your number one was going to be.
Evil Dead, motherfucker! I fucking love The Evil Dead. The Evil Dead is my absolute favourite horror movie in the entire world. It was a close call because I nearly put Fede Alvarez's one, because I have watched that movie like 3 times in the last 6 months. But like, yeah, the first Evil Dead is like my absolute favourite movie. Like my favourite horror movie, and I could genuinely watch that movie like every single day and not get bored of it. I don't really know what to say about it that hasn't already been said. We did like a really fucking long episode on it.
We did.
A couple of years ago when it came out. The episode, not the film. The film came out a very long time ago. We did it for the 40th anniversary of the film coming out. Yeah, I remember...
I think a film that, surprising, you were surprised that I really actually fucking enjoyed.
Yeah, because you're, like, really fussy when it comes to, like, older movies. And I was like, you know, it's a weird movie to watch. Like, if you've never seen it before, with all the claymation stuff at the end and, like, the tree scene and stuff like that. You know, it's a little bit of one of those. But, yeah, I'm glad you did enjoy it. But, yeah, like, I would happily sit and watch The Evil Dead, like the uncut version, like, you know, every single day. And as I said, if it wasn't this one, it would have been like Fede Alvarez's one, because I watched that movie quite a lot as well. Like, you know, as I said, I've watched it 3 times in the last 6 months. I watched it when I was homesick from work a few weeks ago, and I was like, this movie fucking rules. But yeah, Evil Dead is just, for me, it's everything that I love in horror movies. Like, it's got, you know, it's gross, It's boundary pushing. It's got good characters. It's got like longevity. Like, I watch this movie now and I'm like, I still feel exactly the same way about it as I did the first time I saw it when I was like 18. And like, I always look forward to new Evil Dead movies coming out. And I think it's one of those movies, like, yeah, like from a special effects standpoint, like, it's not aged brilliantly, but there are still like scenes in this movie that are like really fucking gnarly when people are getting fucking stabbed in the ankles with like fucking pencils and shit. And it's just really fucking grim. And I love the deadites, like I love the deadite makeup and like all that fucking shit. I just think it's a great movie. And yeah, I wouldn't change anything about it. Like, it's one of those movies that, like, yeah, it's cheesy now in places, but like, I think some of that lends to the charm of the movie. And having rewatched The Evil Dead 2 recently, I'm like, I just think it's fucking weird that they basically just did a comedy remake of this.
Yeah.
For like the sequel. And I think that's probably why I don't like the second one as much. But we will be covering on Monday the third one. And I am very interested to see what you make of the Medieval Dead.
Medieval
Army
Dead.
Army of Darkness when we watch that. So
I will only refer to it as the Medieval Dead from now on.
So yeah, that's my numero uno. It just means that we're like down to your numero uno now.
It is. So this film is a film I do truly love, but also is partially on here because I couldn't get away with putting the second one on here.
I can't believe it's a movie we haven't covered if you love it that much.
I know.
What is it?
It's Shaun of the Dead.
Oh, shit. Okay. Yeah, because you tried to tell me that you thought so the fucking Hot Fuzz was a slasher movie.
I tried to convince Simon over and over and over again that the Hot Fuzz film, the sequel, the second in the Cornetto trilogy,
it's
vanilla.
Yeah, because Shaun of the Dead is strawberry, mint is the world's end. So vanilla. This is the chocolate one, like the nut one, the one with the nuts in it.
It's vanilla, isn't it?
It's the blue one.
Yeah, the vanilla one.
Yeah.
It's Hot Fuzz.
Yeah. But it's got the chocolate on it.
Yeah, but it's the vanilla. It's the vanilla Cornetto. The original Cornetto. Because basically, I personally think that Hot Fuzz is a cop comedy slasher.
Yeah, like a giallo movie, you said, didn't you?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because half of the movie is a masked killer running around killing people. Mm-hmm. And the cops trying to resolve it. That's a fucking slasher movie in my books. And some of the kills are fucking... And it's a cult film as well. Yeah. Some of the kills are pretty fucking brutal. But Simon will not let me get away with saying Hot Fuzz is a slasher movie. So therefore we cannot cover it on the podcast. I cannot put it on my list of Desert Island movies.
Bro, I put it to my horror group when you said that. And they were like, nah.
Your horror group need to fucking man up. So instead I've gone for the first of the Cornetto trilogy, which is also fantastic. The entire Cornetto trilogy is fantastic. I just have a personal favourite. Shaun of the Dead.
Although I would argue that...
The original Zombieland, if you wished.
I would argue that that wasn't always your stance, though. It took us a lot of fucking tries for both of us to come round to World's End being a decent movie.
Oh, yeah. Well, World's End gets better on rewatch.
I had to watch that movie so many fucking times. It was one of those movies I wouldn't give up on it. I was like, I will like this film. However, Last Night in Soho can die in a fucking ditch and I'll never rewatch that movie. That movie can go...
Yeah, I don't know what Edgar was doing on that one.
Yeah.
But Shaun of the Dead. The original Zombieland.
Yeah.
The quintessentially British fucking zombie movie.
Yeah.
It is so on point for what a zombie apocalypse would look like in, like, villages in England.
Yeah.
There's nothing about it that's not just fucking perfect. The cast is amazing. The film is funny and also still graphic and gory and very much a zombie film.
Yeah.
But it's basically your traditional zombie movie. Mm-hmm. Your standard, your Dawn of the Dead, Day of the Dead, Undead of the Dead, Storm of the Dead. There's a lot of the Dead movies, just one of those ones.
Aquarium of the Dead. That's a real movie.
Is it really?
Yeah.
But like, it is like a traditional zombie movie. Like, they move slow and like, they are feasting on everybody they can get their hands on. Like, it's a traditional zombie film. None of this modernised bullshit. Very traditional. But it is also a fucking comedy movie. And somehow they managed to perfectly balance that. That you don't lose the original zombie film in it. But also they don't forgo any laughs wherever they can get them.
Mm-hmm.
How they got the balance so perfect. I mean, across all three of them, to be fair. The balance amongst the Cornetto trilogy is great.
Mm-hmm.
All of them are perfectly balanced between what they're trying to be and being a comedy movie.
Yeah.
And, yeah, there was... I fucking love these films. I'm also British. I feel like there is an ingrown love of the Cornetto trilogy as a British person.
Yeah. I think also, like, the movie's great for, like... The movie's great on a lot of levels, because there's a lot of Easter eggs in it if you're looking correctly for
them. Yeah, there's a kind of film you can watch. I mean, I've seen it fuck knows how many times at this point. And there'll still be stuff when I go back and rewatch any of the three of them that I'm like, didn't even fucking notice that.
It's like I love the fact they work at, like, Romero's electronic store.
Yeah.
And, like, he references...
You got a bit of red on you.
Yeah, it's like he references when he's, like, when they're going to go get Sean's mum. He's like, we're coming to get you, Barbara.
Yeah.
It's like stuff like that I just think is really fucking funny.
Yeah.
And like when they do the same scene twice, when he gets up in the morning and he walks to the corner shop and there's just people around him and he's completely oblivious.
And then he does it later, again and it's just all zombies. And what I really love is obviously they go to the Winchester.
Yeah.
So this is just a fun side story. On the way back from where I used to work, between there and here, like Portsmouth, there was a pub called the Winchester. There is still a pub called the Winchester, it hasn't closed down. And a couple of guys I work with who were coming home one day and it started fucking pissing it down. So they were like, oh, we'll just nip into like the pub. And the man was like, you guys seem wet. They went, oh yeah, we just figured we'd come in and wait for it all to blow over.
Yeah.
And the guy behind the bar thought it was fucking hilarious. And they were like, we don't understand what's so fucking funny about this. Yeah. And it was only afterwards. They were like, yeah, it's fucking, the pub's called the Winchester. And I was like, I didn't know that existed. But like, so it's become very much like, it's a core part of like British colloquialisms and stuff. Like when we got married and everyone was like, oh, what are you doing? And we were like, oh, we're just going to the pub and wait for it all to blow over as like our wedding party. And everyone knows what you're talking about the minute you say it.
Yeah.
Because it's so intrinsically like built into the British mindset now.
They do this in all three of these fucking movies. They check off the gun. And in this one, it's a literal gun,
yeah.
Because there's a shotgun behind the fucking bar.
There's a Winchester. It's a Winchester gun behind the Winchester.
And I think it's either Sean or Ed. One of them says, oh, does it work? And he's like, oh, no, it's for decoration or whatever.
Yeah.
And then at the end, it's what Sean's using when he's like fucking...
Rambling the shit out of stuff.
Sean doesn't get it. Dylan Moran's character gets it because he like aims it at all the people before he gets taken out of the pub and eaten. In a very reminiscent kill of a kill from Day of the Dead, which... I actually got mocked up into a picture of that. I once said on Twitter that I wanted to get killed in a horror movie, and my good friend Jamie, who I love, God bless him, God bless the man, he took the picture from the Dawn of the Dead, or Day of the Dead, sorry, where the man's being pulled apart, and then he just put my head on it. Yeah, and I was like, this is the greatest thing that's ever happened to me.
But it's a fucking great film, and I do feel like, I don't know what its international popularity is like.
The Americans fucking love it.
Yeah.
But I think that's because they, like...
I do wonder, though. I'm like, do you get half of the jokes?
Well, like, a lot of America... So it's weird when you talk to, like, as a British person, and, like, this is I don't want to sound like I'm bragging when I say this, but whenever I am around American people, if I'm interviewing American people, a lot of people talk about British humour, because they talk about, like... Corey Taylor's a prime example of this. He talks about how much he loves, like, QI and... Doctor Who and Red Dwarf and stuff like that. So I think there's quite a lot of, especially with movies like this, where they got like a lot of mainstream recognition. And obviously, like, I think as well, it helps that Edgar Wright did like Scott Pilgrim. So Scott Pilgrim was like massive. So like a lot of people went back and checked out films like this because of his association with them and stuff like that. So, yeah.
But yeah, it's just great. And I feel like if I got stuck on an island, I'd want to be reminded of home. And I feel like Shaun of the Dead does that, because I grew up in a very similar kind of village. There's not a lot there. There's, like, two corner shops, three pubs, and...
A dog. Also,
My dad's village now has an Indian takeaway. It was very exciting.
Did you know, because of this movie, all three of them are in Land of the Dead?
Yes.
They play zombies at, like, an amusement game. It's Edgar, Simon, and Nick. yeah, they're like chained up. It's really funny. So I actually got to work with Romero on one of his movies, which I think is fucking cool.
But yeah, I think it's just a great film, and it's a home movie for me.
Yes. I haven't seen it in a fucking long time. Of the three of them, it's the one. Do you know what? Weirdly enough, World's End is the one I watch the most.
Hot Fuzz is my favourite.
Bring the noise.
If anybody agrees that Hot Fuzz is actually could be a passable horror movie, then my number one is Hot Fuzz. But seeing as I can't actually get away with that, it's Shaun of the Dead.
Yeah, bring the noise. Yeah, boy.
Yeah, boy. I love that film. Got a bit red on you. I say that to people quite a lot.
Yeah.
Also, this is one of the films that I quote quite a lot, like in my day-to-day life.
Mm.
Much like Wayne's World, and nobody ever gets the references because yeah. They're really vague quotes. Just kind of look at you like, "I'm sorry, what?" I think my most used quote though is "She will be mine." Mm. Oh yes, she will be mine.
Did you know dogs can't look up?
An idiot.
That's one of the best lines in Shaun of the Dead when they're having a conversation. The guy's like, "You know, dogs can't look up." Anyway, so that's our top five movies that we would have if we were trapped on a desert island. What five horror movies would you pick? Do you agree with our picks? Do you not agree with our picks? Do you think we're a bunch of idiots? Do you agree that Hot Fuzz is a slasher movie? Do you think it's a giallo movie? Do you think it's just a straight up cop movie? Let us know. As always, find us on social media, SIMAHFpod on Twitter, SoAmAHorrorFan, all lowercase, all one word on Instagram and Tumblr. As we've been saying in the last couple of episodes, the algorithms right now are fucked. So if you do enjoy what you hear and you want to keep up to date with everything that we're doing, obviously make sure you've got your notifications set to following on both Instagram and Twitter, and also follow us on your chosen platform just so you know when all the episodes drop. We will be back on Monday with a look with our first movie for our threequels month, and we will be looking at The Evil Dead 3, aka Army of Darkness, aka The Medieval Dead. Once again, I've been Simon.
I've been Lee.
Stay spooky, stay safe, take care, bye.
Bye.